and welcome to Q&A Quest episode 366. I'm your host, Wheels of Mana, and with me as always.
Riding the trails of cold steel, David McBurney, Family Master.
And we got a direct this week, so there's a lot of things.
That was a surprisingly good direct as well. I didn't have many expectations when they were like, we're rolling together a partner direct and an indie world showcase, because that makes it sound like you don't have much to show.
Yes, it does. And honestly, there wasn't a lot in the indie section.
That definitely was not an indie section for me. There's like a Balatro expansion. I know a lot of people really like Balatro. I haven't played it. It's not really my kind of game.
Not interested.
Pizza Tower was kind of nice to see on Switch.
Yeah, that's cool.
But the rest was not for me. It's whatever. But the partner direct, that had some sauce on it.
Yes. Lots of sauce.
I'm gonna pull up a list. I'm gonna pull up a list so that I don't forget anything. Oh yeah, I guess there was also a Sea of Stars expansion at some stage.
Oh yeah. Not sure what's in that. I don't think they showed a lot. I think that showed up in like one of the highlight reels, even.
Yeah, that's a free DLC or something though. So, but since one of the questions is about it, I'll bring up the Castlevania Dominus Collection.
Yes,
which is all three of the DS games plus Inexplicably Haunted Castle, and Konami super buried the lead because they remade Haunted Castle in a way that I would describe, like, well, technically M2 did, because M2 did the collection, like all of these Konami classic collections of like the arcade ones, the Contra ones, the previous Castlevania ones. Those were all M2. They did Haunted Castle Revisited, and as someone who has played through the original Haunted Castle and has observed someone playing Haunted Castle Revisited, Haunted Castle Revisited is basically Castlevania Rebirth 2. If you ever played Castlevania The Adventure of Rebirth, that had some set pieces and level design ideas from Castlevania The Adventure, but also did a bunch of its own stuff. And Haunted Castle Revisited reminds me of nothing so much as Castlevania The Adventure of Rebirth. But it's really good. And again, you know, burying the lead by not pointing out, hey, we basically made a new Castlevania game and just buried it in this collection. Also a good excuse to pay someone in 2024 to be remixing Cross Your Heart, one of the best Castlevania tracks. But yeah. So what I observed of the Dominus collection, watching a friend play several hours of like Portrait of Ruin, it's an extremely good collection that, all three of those DS Castlevania games are really good. They're quite different from each other in a lot of ways, and they're absolutely worth the asking price. So we had the Dominus collection. That was a really cool one to see. They're finally releasing a Yakuza game on Switch.
Yes.
It's
in the near birth of the Switch 2, we're finally getting one.
Yeah, I suspect that we'll probably see more of them on Switch 2, but we'll probably get... So what they announced was Yakuza Kiwami. That'll be $20, which is a decent enough price to play that portably. Kiwami was the remake of the first one. It makes a reasonable amount of sense to be the first thing they release on another platform, and the timing for its release makes it clear that they're doing it to go along with the Amazon Prime series. Mm. That Prime series is probably going to be dog shit, but at least...
Probably.
But yeah, I suspect Zero will follow not too long after Kiwami, just because, like, when you do one, you kind of, like, there's just all sorts of reasons to do the other. Like, they're technologically closely related. Like, if you've done the work to get one of them working, it's not going to take a lot of a huge additional lift to get the other working. So I suspect Zero is most likely to be the next one that comes out on Switch, and then probably a lot of the others get re-released on Switch too. But yeah, so that'll be nice. It'll be nice to have that available. So for the first thing that is like that made my one of the first things that made my jaw just drop as in like what was Capcom Fighting Collection 2?
Yes.
So
incredibly excited for
a very strange collection of games. Yeah. We've got Street Fighter Alpha 3 Upper, which was the
never even heard of that before.
Yeah, so Alpha 3 Upper was the arcade re-release of Alpha 3 that pushed it onto Naomi hardware and added in the characters that had been added to the console ports. So like Guile and DJ and T-Hawk and shit. Like all the characters that had been added to like the PS1 and Saturn versions of Alpha 3 were just pushed into the arcade version with Alpha 3 Upper. It was never super popular for tournament play. For a lot of weird little, like, for a lot of, like, fighting game community reasons, but it does exist. But that's, like, the least exciting thing on the collection, and it's still kind of neat, but it's, like, the least exciting thing there. Power Stone 1 and 2, which is, I believe the last time those were officially made available was a PSP collection that me and three other people bought. Plasma Sword, Nightmare of Bilstein, the sequel to Star Gladiator, their Star Wars knockoff 3D fighter, which, again, I love it. I don't think that had an audience other than me, but I love it. Project Justice, which is Rival Schools 2.
Ooh.
Like, just a fantastic little game that, again, like, came out completely, like, flew under the radar because, like, fighting games were not at 3D fighters, you know, late 90s, the fighting game is kind of, like, losing steam among the casual audience. So, like, a lot of people kind of miss out on stuff like Project Justice.
Did we get Rival Schools in any of these collections?
No, that's one of the weird things. Like, We didn't get Star Gladiator 1. We didn't get Rival Schools 1. But I believe the reasoning behind this is that I think both of them are Naomi games.
Okay.
So they wrote a Naomi emulator and to use for this collection and just stuffed on it things that made sense with that. So, like, I think Power Stone 1 and 2 would likely be the same thing. Like, they were Dreamcast. They were definitely on Dreamcast. I would suspect that they were Naomi games. Let me double check to make sure that I'm not just, like, spitting complete lies. Yeah, the Power Stone games are Naomi games. Let me check. Plasma Sword. It's actually a Sony ZN2 game, so... although they might be using the Dreamcast version as the base. I don't know. I suspect they're using the arcade version just because that's what they've always done with these collections. But yeah, the ZN2 is kind of a weird PlayStation-derived arcade board. Let me check. Project Justice, I'm almost certain, is a Naomi game, though. Yeah, Project Justice is a Naomi game. Alpha 3 Upper is a Naomi game. Power Stone 1 and 2 are Naomi games. And let me check. Because the last but certainly not least, Capcom versus SNK Pro and Capcom versus SNK2 Millionaire Fighting 2001.
The most important game on the collection.
I assumed this had to happen at some point, just because, like, SBC Chaos came back, and they had worked out some sort of deal. Like, this would have had to have come up when they were working out the deal to put Terry and Mai in Street Fighter VI. Mm-hmm. Like, you don't get to that like level of intercorporate communication without having some sort of like discussion of like we had these old games that we worked together on, like that we cross licensed on, you know. So I figured this had to happen eventually. I didn't think they would announce it before the Marvel vs. Capcom collection came out. Like, I figured we would hear about it maybe next year. But, yeah, that is a wild collection. The amount of good fighting games on there that offer completely unique experiences. Oh, also, for some reason, Capcom Fighting Evolution is on there. That is the worst thing on there. And it's bad, but it's also really funny. So
I can't wait for this collection.
Oh yeah, because like you're getting a lot of games, but you're also just getting a lot of games that are very different as far as fighting games go. Like Power Stone doesn't play like any of these.
No.
Plasma Sword doesn't play like any of the other ones. CVS 1 and 2 are actually quite different. CVS 1 is a 4-button fighting game, like a Neo Geo game, but it was made by Capcom. Fucking Project Justice doesn't play like any of the other ones either. Like, just for sheer variety of content, like, if you just like any, there is a fighting game for just about anyone in this, because like Power Stone is a great party fighter. That's a Power Stone 2 is a 4-player arena fighter. Like, that game's a ton of fun to just fuck around with. Like, it is a great, great looking collection, just for sheer dint of what's in it. But yeah, and man, it made me happy to see. I was joking with some friends about I want a fuck it, we would have to pay someone a license fee collection, because like that's what we're getting down to with Capcom's like old fighting games, is the stuff that's left is stuff they have to pay someone for.
Mm-hmm.
Like my fuck it, we would have to pay someone a license fighting game collection would be like Techromancer, who had like an outside artist design the robots in it, and I think he probably retained some level of the copyright on or at the very least any of the key art that was used. Saturday Night Slam Masters and Ring of Destruction Slam Masters 2 had art from the Fist of the North Star artist. They would probably have to license JoJo's Bizarre Adventure and Heritage for the Future, the two JoJo fighting games that they made on the for the arcade, are, you know, obviously they would have to license that from and whatever publisher owns Jump and Hirohiko Araki. Now that there's something else I was thinking. Oh, Tatsunoko vs. Capcom. Just throw Tatsunoko vs. Capcom on something. That's the most unreasonable ask I have, because they had to go through Herculean efforts to get Tatsunoko vs. Capcom to come out in the US, to the point where they actually had to cut one character that they just could not clear license rights for.
We also need Rival Schools on a collection now.
Yeah, just throw Rival Schools on there.
And Street Fighter EX and EX Plus Alpha.
That would be fun. Those actually have licensing issues too, though.
Yeah.
Because, like, I don't think they're insurmountable licensing issues. I think Capcom and Arika have actually worked together in the recent-ish past. But they do have licensing, because all the original characters that were made for Street Fighter EX, and there's a ton of them, with names like Doctrine Dark and Skullamania, all of them Arika retained ownership on. I don't think that a Street Fighter EX collection, a collection containing the EX games, is out of the question. I think that's absolutely something I could see them doing, but it is something that they would have to license. Fingers crossed. Power Stone 1 and 2 finally out of the... Okay, yeah. CVS 2 in the collection is two games, because they added an EO mode on it, aka the Xbox port. Also the GameCube port. Both of them are... Yeah. Both of the Xbox and GameCube were EO. But yeah, no one likes EO, mostly because it takes out role canceling, which is a bug, but it's also the bug that makes a lot of the cast more viable than they would be without it. But yeah, so hopefully they at least allow role canceling in some version. But yeah, it's really nice to see.
I was going to say, the Xbox port of that game is the one I actually played, and it worked out great on one of the Xbox controllers because they had the black and white button right next to like the face buttons. So you essentially had a 6-button controller. So it was like perfect for that game.
Also, Fireminer's bringing up something that I wanted to save for last, so we will briefly go down some of the other stuff. For some reason, a My Sims collection? Remember those?
Yeah, that was weird.
It's one of those things that's like, it's nice to see it come back, because it was like a weird thing that I know that a lot of people have, of a certain generation, have some nostalgia for. But it was weird to see it come back. It was really weird. I'm not sure which two. It appears to be My Sims and My Sims Kingdom, which is not even remotely all of the My Sims games. But it is very funny. We finally have a release date for Suikoden 1 and 2 Gate, Rune, and Dunan Unification War. We also know that it's getting a physical release, which I've pre-ordered.
Yeah, I did too. That was surprising. I thought I was going to have to hound PlayAsia
import that or something.
An import.
Yeah, or limited run or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah. So that, I don't know what happened to that project. That was announced in like 2022 with a 2023 release date. And then it disappeared for 2 years.
I doubt this and is now, true, but I wonder if... Would there have been someone there that would have wanted to stay out of the way of, why am I blanking on the name of the
game? Aiden.
Aiden, given the passing
of Murayama.
Yeah.
I know that he was like at least on speaking terms with them, but I don't like it had disappeared from the public eye for like a year by the time that happened. And he only passed like a month or two before the game came out. So I think this was a case of like something went weirdly wrong.
Yeah.
Either that or they're putting more effort into the relocalization effort than we would have had reason to believe.
But a solid release date like that, I assume any issues they were run into are cleared up at this point.
Yeah, I suspect that whatever issues they had, they waited until they were done before talking about the games again. But yeah, it'd be nice that the people can play those again. Like, God knows, it's hard to get them any other way now. Tetris Forever? That was fucking weird.
Yeah.
So everything that's in Tetris Forever is like a weird fucked up version. let me see if I can get like the list of what all's actually in it.
It's a digital
because it's a bunch.
Two.
Yeah, it's a Digital Eclipse one. So it's one of their Gold Master series.
Yeah,
it's one of their Gold Master series. It's going to be great. 15 different Tetris games of some stripe, according to the Steam page. I'm trying to remember what, because like I remember some of the really weird ones, like, oh, it's Tetris 2 plus Bombless, a game that doesn't play like Tetris at all. Or Tetris Battle Gaiden, one of those ones that's like got a huge following, but which has just absolute, like, they've just never re-released it in any fashion. It has the original Famicom Tetris. Like, that's a version, that's like the first, like, console version that Nintendo was party to, but it's also, like, infamously not a good version. There's like, a recreation of the original Electronica 60 version. Like, for those unaware, that's the actual computer the Russian computer that the first version of Tetris is made on was the Electronica 60. But Yeah, an interesting thing, and there's like a mode that'll just like swap you between a bunch of these. But yeah, like just a really interesting historical document, because like there's a lot of weird versions of Tetris that are really hard to get hold of. So it'll be nice to have like an official way to play Tetris Battle Gaiden.
Yeah, kind of weirdly excited for that. That could be a lot of fun digging into some of
Yeah,
this
no,
stuff on
that we
there.
could have a lot of fun on the shenanigans playing like
Yeah.
random versions of Tetris. Let's see.
Hello.
Making sure I'm
Hello.
okay. We were just talking about what was at the Nintendo Direct.
Oh, cool. I did not actually see it, so inform me. Tetris
Collection.
Collection.
Collection
What?
of very strange versions of Tetris.
Yes.
Tetris. Did they have Waltris?
They do not have Waltris. They do have Tetris Battle Gaiden, which for a long time
Oh.
was Japan exclusive.
See, well, I'm thinking of some old things that were like shareware on the bulletin board systems back in the late 80s.
Nah, these are strictly official.
Waltris. No. Then they're not getting the really weird ones yet.
Well, they're getting some of the weird ones because they're getting stuff like Tetris 2 plus Bomblist, which doesn't actually play like Tetris. But yeah, and relevant to your interests, they finally put a release date on the Suikoden 1 and 2 remasters.
Cool.
Those are
I
out in
may eventually
March.
play that series.
Yeah, I recommend it.
Fireman has asked if they have Clacks.
There's that is not a Tetris game, and it is no longer the 90s, and it's no longer time for Clacks.
I don't know what that is.
What, you don't know what Clacks is?
No.
Clacks was a puzzle game. It's not a very good one, but it's like a bunch of little blocks like rolling towards the screen, and then you stack them on top of each other, but weirder looking than that sounds. Clacks was, God, who made that? I guess it was Atari. But it's a very mediocre puzzle game that like has kind of a cult following, but it's yeah, it's definitely it's no Tetris. But yeah, so also hello, Joe.
Hello,
But
can you
yeah,
hear me?
we can hear you.
Good.
But let's see. So yeah, I guess the most important thing to me that has not yet been referenced was Legend of Heroes: Trails in the Sky First Chapter remake.
Yeah, and that was in a montage.
Yeah, in Japan it got a full trailer. I suspect the reason that it didn't get a full trailer in English was that they don't have any English voice recorded.
Yeah, that makes sense.
That
Or
would
at
be a
least
very good
inserted.
reason not to, yet.
So,
Cause...
who is publishing this? I assume
We don't know.
we don't know.
So
Okay.
Falcom talked about this on like they've put up like an FAQ where it's basically like we don't have a publishing partner for this right now. If it comes to that, we will publish it ourselves.
Interesting.
But I suspect they would rather not have to do that simply because it would add a bunch of extra issue, a bunch of extra stuff for them to concern themselves with. But this is notable for being the first time that any Trails game was announced at the same time in English and Japanese.
I
That
see.
is that has never happened before. They're both listed for 2025. I would say, like, based on what they've shown screenshots that show that they are using the XSEED translation. It
Mean, is
seems
the
to like.
translation that like that distinctive that they can say for certain that it's not just something that looks a lot like it?
It's like people have been doing comparisons of every line they've shown, and they're all one for
Oh,
one
okay.
matches.
I forget which fandom I'm talking about. Okay, sure. Yes. Okay.
Yeah. 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 They're all one for one matches. One like that happening once would be normal because like some of those text boxes are pretty banal.
Generic.
But the amount of times it's happened, it's the XC translation because they haven't if they said we weren't ready to announce their publishing partner at this time, I would say, oh, then it's probably just that they haven't worked out final details with XSEED. But evidently they haven't. Whatever legal wrangling they've done, they're allowed to use that script. Which is... Because if you just showed it in the trailer without having legal rights to it, you'd be cruising for a bruising.
Yeah.
So they've gotten some sort of
agreement.
Yeah, agreement about being able to use that script.
Whatever they would end up paying for the rights to that script, it would almost certainly be cheaper than having to retranslate the entire trail script.
Oh yeah, no, retranslating that script is gargantuan.
Oh man,
not worth it.
Yeah. Oh man.
But yeah, so. That I suspect that is something that they're going to try to launch simultaneously all around the world.
Hmm.
Yeah. And they would not have time to retranslate any of those.
No.
Yeah. Not unless they were willing to delay it for every region in order to make sure that one region. And yeah, it just doesn't make any sense. But yeah, this seems like it's in keeping with what Falcom's president has been talking about, where the sales for the series have been stronger than expected in English, and that they want to decrease the wait time between releases. This would be an easy win for them to get, hey, here is a simultaneous release everywhere. And it's also a very easy jumping on point because it's the first trail game. And it looks great. It's clear that it's being done with the technology that was developed for Daybreak. And it's really nice looking. You can see some fun animation flourishes of Estelle, twirling her staff around and putting it away when she leaves a combat area. It's really nice looking. They've been having fun doing with the trailer, the longer trailers, is that they'll show the they'll show the original version alongside the new one to show how close a recreation it is. And I have my, you know how I feel about remakes, but at the same time, one, the original version is still available, so I don't feel like they're just trying to erase the original version, which helps. And the other is that, the change of perspective does give you a new way of looking at the world. That is the thing that is drawing me to this version, is just being able to see the world of Liberal from Trails in the Sky redone in a way that it's looking at this scale is very appealing to me. So excited for that. I would suspect you will not be seeing any meaningful additions to the content simply because changes really, because it needs to still work as a within continuity to the other games, and they're using the same script in English and Japanese. So it's one of those things. It's they are definitely not changing anything.
Maybe adding little bits here and there, but that would be at most.
Yeah, at most you might see some additional quests tucked in, like what happened with Trails in the Sky Evolution, which hopefully is better now.
Retroactively adding some things
like
in.
Like cameos and such.
Stuff from later games just to make it fit better together.
Yeah, what they did for the Crossbell games was that you'd see here's a couple of characters that are cameoing from the Cold Steel games, and they've just been sort of tucked into the background. You can find them and talk to them where they should be for that time period.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if we see some of that in this first chapter remake, but largely anything major, they can't really change it. It's baked into the continuity, but they at least have an excuse. Yeah. It's very pretty. It's nice to, because I have an extreme fondness for that world, and so seeing it from a new perspective does have some value to me.
I just beat the original version earlier this year.
Too bad, you're doing it again.
I never actually started the series.
So it's perfect for you.
I value my free time. I know that I do not have nearly enough free time to do this series.
Don't worry, we'll get to this.
I did, for the record, just start back in on Trails of Cold Steel. I am just starting the last chapter. So, then I can move on to Cold Steel 2, 3, and 4.
Yay.
And, hopefully, by the time that Daybreak 2 is coming out, I will be done with Daybreak 1. That is my ambitious goal.
My goal is to finish the series before the heat death of the universe.
I don't think you're on pace for that.
No, not.
How about the heat death of the planet?
That's sooner. That's going to make it worse.
That's an ambitious goal there, Joe.
Yeah, that's like 30 years, right?
Or less, yeah.
That got dark.
I finished a game last week. We'll talk about that later.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So that was surprisingly. Oh.
I was going to say, that actually reminded me of in the final boss battle for Blood, where the Vampire Lord offers immortality, and she's like, hell no. And he's like, do you intend to die? He's like, yeah, we're all going to eventually die. Have you seen the climate recently? But not now. Today's you.
Briefly to bring back up another thing for Sickos. That was announced at the Direct. Tales of Graces F remaster.
Yes.
Yeah, that's one I haven't played either.
Exilia remake.
I'm sure that there's going to be an Exilia remaster as well.
There is, too.
But sure. It's fine, because we're at least getting Graces.
Yes.
I'm trying to remember where Graces falls on the order list, because I'm pretty sure I've played it.
It was originally a Wii game.
One of the Mariachi Dungeon games had it, I think. It was on Wii?
Yes.
Yeah, it was originally a Wii game.
Yeah, I'm thinking of Eternia, then.
Yeah.
Okay.
Originally, I have to recall the Wii version because it had some kind of
The problem was the Wii version, when you went into New Game Plus, it would just like all the event flags would collapse in on themselves. So it was a problem. And so they recalled it, they re-released it, but by that point the damage was done to its reputation. It was re-released on the PS3 as Tales of Graces F. They added a super long additional scenario. I don't feel like being longer was something that any Tales of game has ever needed, except maybe Tempest.
That's one of the things I noted in my review of Tales of the Tempest. It really needed more time to cook.
It was like the one Tales
Among
of
other
game.
Things, many other things, but yes.
Yeah, but it was the one Tales of game that was probably shorter than it should have been, whereas every other Tales of game is way too long. But Graces F is really, really good. It's if you ever played Tales of Hearts on the DS, not the Vita, if you ever played Tales of Hearts on the DS, it's very cut from the same cloth as that.
It's basically that.
Oh, cool.
That in 3D, essentially.
Yeah, it's really it's got one of the best, like, it's got one of, if not the best, combat and character advancement systems in the series. So it's nice to see that come back. I was worried for it.
Yeah.
But yeah, and they gave it like a weird, like, 30th anniversary, not 30th anniversary, but like Tales of Remaster banner. Like, this is going to be a thing we keep doing.
Yeah. So that's definitely where those rumors for the Exilia remaster came from.
I'm sure that Exilia, like, the only question about Exilia to me is it a
collection of the two, or do they sell them separately? I'd suspect they sell them separately.
I wonder if they're going to do, since that Symphonia remaster was just the first game, I wonder if they're going to do a remaster of its sequel at some point.
If you ask someone at Namco Bandai, they're going to like sort of hem and haw and say, well, the original Tales of Symphonia was a mothership title, but the sequel was merely an escort title, so we're not too concerned about that, which is a shame. Man. It's a better game than people give it credit for. But
bring me back to the mothership title days.
Remember when there were so many of these damn things that they had to like make up an entire like insane designation? They couldn't even say mainline and spinoff. They said mothership and escort.
It's weird to me that as like the major releases have sold more and become more popular, that somehow they're releasing fewer Tales games. What happened?
I had someone joke that every so often. I saw someone joke that every so often when they're looking at Japanese Twitter, when a new Tales of is announced, Legendia trends, and I'm not sure how ironic it is. But seeing that made me just think, man, I really want to throw Legendia into a volcano. But
throw Fantasia into a volcano while we're at it.
No, that'll mess up the timeline.
Oh,
that's right.
Grandfather Claus,
it's in the same world as Symphonia, isn't it?
Yeah, Symphonia is a distant prequel to Fantasia.
I always forget that.
Speaking of which, they should really do. They really should remaster Narikiri Dungeon Cross Edge or whatever it was.
If they're gonna,
that one actually seemed pretty good.
If they're gonna remaster any version of Fantasia, you might as well do the one that had the cool battle systems.
But the
ones I'd actually want to see get like the full remaster treatments are the ones that I don't think Namco would ever do, both because they're 2D and because they're like, they generally don't have extant English translations, which means that any like localization would be a much larger lift. Like, what I want to see, it's like Tales of Rebirth or Tales of Hearts or, you know, Tales of Destiny remake or Destiny 2. I don't think we're getting any of those. I think those are a dead letter. What we're going to see is Exilia, Exilia 2, maybe Zestiria.
All the low-hanging fruit.
Yeah, the stuff that has an English translation, that does have a fandom, that doesn't require, like, you know, them to go through a lot, because like, I mean, as much as I want to see like Destiny remake or Tales of Rebirth come out in English, I can't pretend that I think anyone's ever gonna like that's ever gonna financially make sense. Like, we might see Abyss might be in the cards as well, but yeah, realistically, I don't think we're going to see anyone go back as far as something as, again, like Destiny 2. Like most of those Team Destiny games that never came out in English. We're just not going to see those. And that's a shame. But, you know, you got to be realistic with what might actually someday see a return on investment.
Yeah, it's clearly they're not looking to do too much to these games.
Mm-hmm.
Like, say something like a Tales of Hearts remaster is going to require a lot of work, and they would just remaster the Vita version anyways. Please don't do that.
Yeah, don't
forget
bother.
I said
don't.
Anything, Namco. Don't listen to me.
Without its original combat and character advancement system, there just isn't that much to recommend about Hearts. It's a shame. And also, without its original art, the sprite art was so much nicer than those cheap-looking 3D models.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, I don't suspect we'll ever see those.
Yeah, that's not to say the ones they are going to bring us aren't worth checking out. And
yeah, I mean, like,
a lot of these were stuck on PS3.
Yeah, like, I'm lukewarm on Exilia, but it's not a game I would warn anyone away from.
It's fine. That Grace's,
totally fine.
Grace's F is really good, and
Yeah.
I think gets shit on by some people for reasons beyond my understanding. It's real good.
And pour one out for Mutsumi Inamata, the artist who did a lot of those Team Destiny games character designs and art. She passed away earlier this year.
That sucks.
So, but yeah, it was nice to see Grace's F get the treatment. Like the things that they're talking about for it are also quite nice. You can turn off encounters. You can most structurally surprising is you can access the grade shop before New Game Plus.
That's interesting.
Hmm.
For those who haven't played a Tales of game, when you finish a battle, you get awarded or deducted a certain amount of grade. And normally, when you finish the game, when you go into New Game Plus, you can spend the grade that you accrued over the course of the game in the grade shop, and that gives you really wild bonuses, like, generally things like, 10 times EXP and money, or just stuff that affects the game in the game balance. So it's really wild to be like, yes, in this remaster, you'll be able to access the grade shop without having finished the game. But I suppose that is also a marker of them essentially making it for people who had already, who wanted to replay the game as much as for newcomers. But yeah, I love Graces. I'm glad that it's getting another shot at life where it'll be on everything and people can actually play it. but yeah, I suspect that what we're going to see next is Exilia and Exilia 2. In the Japanese, in the Japanese direct, they also showed a Tokimeki Memorial 2 or 1 remake? Yeah.
Probably 2. That was like the most popular one.
Yeah, I think it's probably 1. It's whichever one was Forever with You.
Forever with You.
Be together forever with you. Forever and ever, Tupac. But yeah, Tokimeki Memorial Forever with You, I think, was the PS1 and like Saturn port of Tokimemo 1.
Yeah, it looks like it is. Yeah, the original Tokimeki Memorial.
Yeah, but okay. Yeah, apparently that's getting a remake on modern consoles as well, which is wild to see. We definitely won't be getting that, which is a bit of a shame. It's a very important game, but it would also be a huge pain in the ass to translate and has no known English demographic.
Was it 1 or 2? I think it was number 2 was the one that had the, like, it was programmed so that no matter any name that you could give yourself that would work in Japanese
kana. Yeah, font, it would use Japanese phonetics.
Pronounceable. So it had full voice acting that it could include your name.
Yeah. A completely unlocalizable feature.
Yeah. Instead of like with Dragon Quest VIII, where no matter what name you gave, the Yangus would be calling you Governor. Gov.
Yeah, Gov, or good old FF10, where everyone found a way to structure every single sentence in the game to not reference Tidus's name.
Or South Park, Stick of Truth.
Just
let's not go into what they actually called the main character, but yes, they avoid using his name.
Yeah. But yeah, no, this was a very impressive little tech trick that also was completely unlocalizable to any other language. but yeah. FireMiner bringing up Bandai Namco needed a W after they announced that they would be shutting down Blue Protocol, a game that they've spent the last 5 or 6 years developing. I'm sure Amazon ate most of the cost on that, since they were supposed to do some amount of since they were supposed to do worldwide distribution on that. I have no idea how much of the money they spent on that, but I'm also like, I did not remember the Blue Protocol was happening. I would not have been able to tell you what that was.
I know it's a thing that existed, or currently, now past tense existed.
Yeah. Visual novel fans are throwing a tantrum because the English direct didn't show Tokimeki Memorial, but showed a parody dating sim called Date Everything. Yeah, I'm just, like, I'm sure, I wish whoever made that, well, I'm just absolutely, like, the joke is run dry on like, fucking weird, like, just, like, parody dating sims. Mm. Like, you know, like, there has never been a real attempt to sincerely market dating sims in the U.S. And so, every year we get, like, one or two that are essentially jokes. And it's just like, and they're often weird because they're jokes that reflect the fact that, like, the English understanding of these is visual novels, not dating sims. Because, like, if you actually look at the gameplay of Tokimeki Memorial, like, the archetypal dating sim, it's a mess of stats and scheduling. Like, it's a lot of planning, and it's basically just a giant spreadsheet. And, like, the joke dating sims, or, like, the, like, absurdist dating sims. I'll be a little more, like, charitable than joke and say absurdist dating sims. They're always cut more from the cloth of like visual novels, where it's just a story being told to you. I don't know the mechanics of Date Everything, simply because, like, there must be a lot more player choice than the usual, like, absurdist dating sim, by virtue of the fact that there's supposed to be there's supposed to be, like, 1,000 or hundreds of things that you can interact with. But, like, the impressions that I saw, like, it was just sort of like, okay, like, this feels like a joke that wears thin really fast. Like, the impression that I was reading was someone talking about, like, oh, I went and started dating a toilet, and it's like a SoundCloud rapper, and it's just like, this sounds like a joke that's going to get really old really fast. But, I mean, more power to him. Like, whatever. It's not, like, none of these were for me. Like, even something, like, I'd be pick up and be fascinated by Tokimeki Memorial, but not as, like, something I per se want to play so much as just like, oh, this is an extremely important historical artifact. Tons of important people at Konami in the 90s wrote or worked on this game in some capacity. It was a huge hit and one of their biggest franchises until they just absolutely pissed it away with Tokimeki Memorial 3. But, like, you know, it would be a clinical sort of fascination. Speaking of Konami, when it comes to remaking bad games, how much of the original should be preserved? Case in point, Haunted Castle Revisited. It still plays as crunchy as I remember. Konami just added the sub-weapons, gave you more health, and lowered the enemy respawn rate. Like, I get the sentiment, but as someone intimately familiar with original Haunted Castle, watching someone play through the first three levels, they're more redesigned than you're giving it credit for. Like, that is a very different game. It has a lot of set pieces from the original, but it's a very different game. And I think that mostly they were good at keeping the things that make Haunted Castle distinctive at a glance. It's got its weird blue-haired Simon. It's got, it's strange, like, the second level strangely scrolls left for some reason. In general, like, they kept the sort of broad structural cues, but made a simpler game that was a lot more in line with traditional Castlevania. You don't throw out the vampire killer and replace it with a mace for no reason. They took out some of the more bizarre, anachronistic sub-weapons. There's no longer just a cartoon bomb. Which, I get why they did it. It's a little bit of a shame, but I mean, they also include the original Haunted Castle. I can't exactly complain. But yeah, you know.
What makes a game crunchy? I don't get it.
I believe the acronym crunchy basically just is referring to the idea that it's got some degree of
crunchy.
Crunchy
started from tabletop games, where a tabletop like D&D style game was crunchy when it had lots of had stats for stats for stats where you could
number crunching.
Your average tabletop RPG has to balance between the crunch, which is number manipulation, and the fluff, which is the setting.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, and the Disgaea and so games are very arguing crunchy. Over
what balance is best and whether or not they actually like crunchiness at all and would just want to role play with the fluff.
Okay.
So. Yeah. This has different meanings for like action games, but yeah, like in this case, it would be like the game still feels like Haunted Castle, but yeah, it's a good remake. M2 always does good work, and again, they kind of buried the lead on the idea of, hey, they basically made Castlevania Rebirth 2 and didn't tell anyone. Let's see, play Haunted Castle and then play NES Castlevania and you will see what I mean. There's something fundamentally weird. Oh yeah, no, I know what you mean by that, trust me, I promise. I have beaten every Castlevania game.
Wow.
Don't play Vampire Killer. That's my advice to people as a whole. By that I mean MSX Vampire Killer. I know that in at least one territory, Castlevania Bloodlines was released as Vampire Killer. That game is worth playing, but don't play the MSX Vampire Killer. That game is hateful. Here's your bit of trivia for the day. MSX Vampire Killer is designed to work with a Konami-produced cheat cartridge. Because there is no saves and no continues in the base game. But if you buy the Konami Game Master cartridge and insert it into the MSX's other cartridge port, it gives you access to unlimited continues. And that is the only way to make that game even slightly playable. Fireminer saying we need a Lament of Innocence and Curse of Darkness remaster. I can give or take the N64 games. I would honestly happily throw the N64 games into a volcano. But it would be nice to see them preserved on the basis of people should have a way to play them. But I
say, have
honestly,
you seen the recent secondhand prices for some of those games in Japan? Because I have, and oh man.
Good lord.
So, all of the Game Boy Advance and DS Castlevania games go easily over 10,000 yen right now.
Mm-hmm. Oh, speaking of things being too expensive in Japan, the PS5 got a price hike again.
Wow.
What?
It's now 8 mon, yeah.
What's that?
It's 8 mon now. Or they're upping it.
What's the converted price? How much is that in US dollars?
Yeah, so
well,
it would be
well over $500.
Yeah, it's $552.
At the current exchange rate, I mean, obviously the exchange rate has been all over the place this past summer.
Yeah, it went up the notable thing here is that it went up 20%.
Ugh.
And all the accessories also went up in price. Like, everything is more expensive. I would imagine that feels like a kick in the teeth. I saw some Japanese Twitter posts that were just like measuring PS5 prices in number of Switches you could buy. But yeah, it's can't imagine why they're pissed about that. Can't imagine, but Yeah, it's one of those things that's like, man, they do not care about selling in that territory. They want to reach a certain price per unit. But yeah, just not engendering goodwill. What did it originally launch at? Like, okay, because it was like, okay, yeah, when it was originally released, it was 49,980 yen, which is just it's a wild thing to see that. Yeah, it's now 79,980 yen. So that is a 30,000 yen rise over the course of 4 years. It's yeah. Healthy industry. Like in a healthier version of whatever we're seeing, they would have found a way to reduce the price of the components over the course of 4 years, that they could have at least maintained price. That wouldn't have been ideal, but you know, we've long since left behind the point where hardware reduces in price at any point in its lifetime, and it sucks. But like, to see it actually go up is still like a unique nightmare I was not prepared for 4 years ago. Let's see. Okay, yeah, we have to talk about the sad thing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so
in the direct, we missing.
I think we've hit everything. I think. So, hey, you know that Vision of Mana that just came out today?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, its developer just got shit canned.
Oh no.
Not because of anything I just heard about that. Game.
Yeah, nothing to do with the game, nothing to do with, not even to do with Square. It was its parent company. Stuff. Yeah, its parent company NetEase seems to have decided they were getting the chop before the game came out. I was saying before we started recording that I suspect that the only reason that they weren't given the chop like months ago is that they were under contract to deliver a video game to Square, and so it was determined that keeping them in business long enough to finish that contractual obligation made more financial sense than chopping them like probably half a year ago, maybe earlier. Yeah, it's a shame because by all accounts Vision of Mana is actually quite good.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we finally get a new Mana game that's actually good, and then its developer immediately gets absolutely obliterated because this is a very healthy industry that we care about. Fingers crossed for everyone who was working at Oka Studio, which was the company that was making that. They find new jobs, hopefully, if they're... if they're smart about it, Square is trying to pick up some of them because that's clearly a talented team that can help them get some Mana games going. But yeah, as it turns out, there is no such thing as a safe corporate overlord. This all seems to have happened just because NetEase and Tencent got cold feet about their investments into Japanese studios and decided to just start exploding them. Is also not comforting because NetEase also owns companies like Grasshopper Manufacturer.
Oof.
Ooh, that's so bad.
Yeah. Fireminer's saying that both parties are unsatisfied with the profit margin. I'm not sure where that's coming from, but like, I would have assumed that any assumptions about the split on profits on Vision of Mana, which I'm going to suspect there was none, like, Square paid for the development and they reap all the money, but I don't know the nature of those contracts. That's just my broad assumption. But like,
my response would be, if they're concerned about the split, they should have they should have made more of a stink about that when they were negotiating a contract.
Sure.
Yeah, so that's video games, baby. It's not a healthy industry. Joe, what have you been playing? Tell me about the.
Well, I've been playing Call of Duty. Speaking of, bad companies.
No, tell me about the arcade games. I don't want to hear about this shit.
Yeah. Okay. No. oh, I was playing Cadillacs and Dinosaurs.
Oh yeah.
Which came out in 93? And so, actually, maybe you can answer this. Did it come out before or after the Jurassic Park movie?
It would have been, almost exactly the same time.
Yeah, and Michael Crichton started writing the book before that. So
A long time before that.
Yeah. So, interesting.
Let's say, that's a June of 93 film. The other thing is the arcade games don't have the kind of solid release dates you and I would think of.
Okay.
They just sort of came whenever they reached an arcade. Let's see what I can find.
Yeah, and then it came out after Street Fighter II and Final Fight. And it plays very similarly to Final Fight, but it's just a much more interesting and fun game, I would say.
It's 4 years of beat 'em up design.
Yeah,
Final Fight. But
there's an enemy that, I swear it looks, it's Blanka. They gave him a different name, but if you watch the video I did, it's not up on YouTube yet. But I'm just like, your name's Blanka. Shut up, get out of here. You're Blanka. Yeah. Okay.
So I might have an answer for you, for the record.
Well, I actually tried not to hurt the dinosaurs unless it made me, Yeah.
But, yeah, I actually might have an answer for you just looking at this old Capcom Japan site that Web Archive thankfully has, which seems to peg it as an April of 1993 game as far as their internal reckoning. So, a few months before Jurassic Park.
Huh. That's a similar premise. They're experimenting and they bring back dinosaurs, and then there's this evil doctor who wants to turn people into weird mutant dinosaur people. And
Jurassic Park.
Yeah, but it's fun as hell. It has Cadillacs, it has dinosaurs. I mean, what else do you want? There's amazing advertising on that. Good marketing. So it has guns too. It has Cadillacs and dinosaurs and guns. Wow.
Having read interviews with the president of Capcom from the 80s and 90s, I can say that it makes perfect sense to me why they would have sought that license. Because he mentioned that, people who worked at Capcom at the time mentioned that his philosophy was essentially that Western players were really into ninjas and dinosaurs, so those were always, safe. Because, you could, both Japanese and Western players would enjoy them. So Cadillacs and dinosaurs make perfect sense. It's dinosaurs, those are safe. People everywhere like dinosaurs.
Who doesn't, right? I actually felt sorry for the dinosaurs, and I tried not to hurt them in the game. I don't know. But typically, a lot of them they won't bother you unless you hit them, and then they'll walk off the screen after a certain amount of time. But no, that game actually took almost an hour to beat, so that was my latest episode of Arcade August. I didn't upload it yet, but it's just a fun game. It really is.
It's a good beat 'em up.
Good, Capcom, awesome music and everything. Yeah.
Yeah. Capcom's, post-Final Fight beat 'em ups were often hard to port to home consoles, so they kind of didn't, but a lot of them are really, really good.
And I want those characters in Street Fighter. What the hell? Let's go.
That might be a bridge too far, but
yeah. And I guess there was also an animated series, so I'm like, oh, I guess I got to watch that now. Yeah. And it was based off of a comic too. I'm like, what? Yep. Wow, this is bigger than I thought. Wow.
Yeah, so it's also a Sega CD game that's completely unrelated and quite bad.
Oh, all right. Well, we'll avoid that. And then I did a very quick playthrough of Dodonpachi because that only took 20 minutes.
Yeah,
that's the kind of game. That game, you're guaranteed to beat it if you just keep putting in more quarters, you know, and you just keep spamming bombs. So yeah, I know there's people who can beat it without getting hit or using bombs. It's like, screw you. No, I spam those bombs. It's fine. So that'll get uploaded at some point. And I did I did acquire those two games you wanted me to play. So those those are on deck for, you know, if I get a chance to record them either tomorrow night or Saturday night before August ends, and then I gotta upload everything. So
the world demands the cliffhanger, Edward Randy and Cannon Dancer.
Yeah.
Also, Will's just getting his ass beat. Jesus.
So the Cannon Dancer is, yeah, you're right. It's basically, it's the guys who worked on Strider, and it's like an unofficial sequel to Strider or something like that. But
yeah, but with like this really cool like cyber, this really cool cyberpunk Middle East setting.
Yeah. So I played a few minutes. I practiced both games real quick to make sure they weren't total shit and.
None of the games you've recommended for arcade are bad.
No, you're right. No, I trust you. So the I was playing it for a little bit, and then you get to like, I think it was the first boss or something, and a guy shows up in this like steampunkish stretch limo thing. I'm like, oh, that's neat. Yeah. There's a lot of neat things. Yeah,
it's a super neat game, but both of them are Cliffhanger, Edward Randy, and Cannon Dancer. Cannon Dancer is available on modern consoles for those interested in getting a legit copy.
Yeah, you can buy it on any platform.
Yeah,
apparently. So those two games are coming next for Arcade August, and then I didn't do any Neo Geo games, but I don't know that I could always do Neo Geo November or something. I don't know. So yeah, now that I'm not, I haven't been doing any live streams on Twitch, so now I'm just doing YouTube content and then just playing stuff that I want to play just for fun. Wow, who would have thought? What a novel idea. So, yeah, I've been playing Diablo 4, and I still have to beat the main story with my first character, my rogue, who is now level 50, and I'm on Act 4 of the story, I think. But then my sorceress that I made for season 5, they're giving me a lot of extra money, XP. They're just showering me with legendary items. So I'm level 50 already and was able to get to the tier 3, which is harder, but then they give you more stuff and more money. I beat the Cathedral of Light or whatever. So it's like that's actually coming along too. I'm hoping to, you know, actually make it to the end of the seasonal content this season and then still go back, you know, and beat the original campaign. That's mainly it. So it's Call of Duty, Diablo 4, Dodonpachi, Calyx and Dinosaurs, and then briefly tried those two games to make sure they worked in the emulator. Mm-hmm. And just going from there. I was just looking at all the games coming up, and it's like, holy shit, I need more money. I want to get Astrobot. Star Wars Outlaws is actually getting decent reviews, I think.
It looks good.
And then, ReFantazio and, East 10, and both of the Capcom collections we already talked about, and, oh man, all these friggin' games. It's wild. Yeah,
it's going to be a big...
Also Brothership.
Yeah, Mario and Luigi Brothership.
Yeah, and the new Zelda game where you actually play as Zelda.
Echoes of Wisdom. And Fire Miner brought up one that I wish that I could spare some cash for at the moment, but Shadow of the Ninja Reborn, which is...
Yes!
Really, really not like the Tango Project, the company that's been making those like old Natsume Atari remakes, it keeps doing great stuff. They did Wild Guns Reloaded, which was great. They did the Ninja Warriors once again, which was great. I believe it's now, I still hate that they changed the title in English to Ninja Saviors Return of the Warriors, but like, that's a great game. They did Pocky and Rocky Reshrined, that's a great game, and Shadow of the Ninja Reborn, which seems to also be a great game. Please give that a look if you've got the cash, unlike me. I am strapped at the moment, but
yeah, Shadow of the Ninja is really neat. Definitely want to. Well, I mean, the original one is on Switch Online, so you can play it on there. Yeah. And it's two player.
Wow. Yeah, and Reborn is like all of theirs. It's a nicely expanded remake with great co-op.
Yeah. So that's neat. And then one of these days, Wheels and I might actually make it to the end of Splintered Fate. I think we did. We just barely got past Rocksteady and Bebop, but then we promptly got murdered in the next biome because it just the difficulty spiked again. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So. No, that's it. That's all I've been playing. What was the other game I was just thinking of? All right, I gotta think about this. Yeah, I know, I lost it. No, I'm getting really tired here, unfortunately.
Okay, Chewbacca. I might have to wrap this one sooner than later.
Yeah,
Gaijin, did you want to talk about what you've been playing?
Well, I mean, this entire time I've been playing the I would say the last really good mana game. Okay, never mind. Two really good mana games ago now.
Trials of Mana remake?
That's why I had to qualify this as two games ago.
Legend of Mana?
Okay, Legend of Mana, got it.
No, I don't count that. I mean, that was an up make at most. I'm talking about Sword of Mana.
Huh, I would not. That's a divisive one.
The GBA one?
Yeah,
that's the GBA.
That's the GBA remake of the first one. The very divisive one.
I don't know why, to be honest, because it's a really good game.
Yeah.
I mean, it's backfilled a whole lot of plot and world building from all sorts of places. So, I mean, you find characters from Legend of Mana and original Trials of Mana in there, so it's kind of cool. And it works. The attack magic is a bit wonky, but yeah, the support magic's a lot better. Yep.
I'm going to briefly.
I mean, it's definitely not anywhere in the bottom. Let's see.
No.
There are at least three mana games that are substantially worse.
Let's see, Children of Mana.
Uh-huh.
Dawn of Mana.
Uh-huh.
And the RTS.
Heroes of Mana, yeah. In other words, the three games that came after it.
Yes.
Three games that were part of the World of Mana initiative that died a brief and unmourned death.
Which it actually shares quite a bit of world-building lore with those three, it's just that they didn't do it very well.
Yeah. Wheels is just absolutely getting his ass beat during this. Like, are you playing on hard Wheels?
That's not important.
This game is wild.
I mean, yes.
Freaking lasers.
I
was just commenting. I just learned of the existence of Demon School, and it's getting delayed. But I'm like, isn't that just Disgaea 3? Bunch of demons out of school.
No, it's actually Persona. Ish.
Oh, okay. But then I saw a video of the first boss, and it's this skeleton with giant hands. You gotta attack his hands, and I'm like, isn't that just the first boss from Disgaea 3 where you gotta shoot the Overlord's fingers? I don't know. It looks cool, though.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just absolute destruction just watching this play out. It's hurting.
I'm tired.
Yeah.
I'm not rolling. We're doing anything properly.
If you're not rolling, are you really wheels?
Be more funny.
No.
Gonna paint your wagon. Gonna paint it fine. Let's see. I'm gonna hit something that was in the, like, at least one that was in the Discord, and then we can call it a night.
I have to talk about my review game real quick, though.
Oh, yeah, go ahead while I'm looking.
I'm not sure when the review will be up, hopefully sooner rather than later, but I played Fairy Tale Dungeon for review, which is the deck building roguelike fairy tale game.
Evil.
Which I was able
to. That sounds awful.
No, it's wonderful. I was able to complete the story mode in like 5 hours. There's obviously lots of more to do after that, but it's pretty fun. It's got like a pixely look. Oh god, game over.
Game over, yeah.
I'm too tired to be doing this dungeon right now. It's got like a pixely look and some nice music. I think it was, I forgot the composer, but I think it was like the Secret of Mana composer. It's got some nice music. The mechanics are kind of simplistic, but comparing to something like, say, Slay the Spire. But kind of the nice thing about it is, so you'll pick a character, you'll go through the dungeon, and when you complete a dungeon with that character, you save the deck you've built. And then as soon as you've beat it with 3 characters, which doesn't take very long because the intro dungeon is not that hard, then you can take 3 of those characters into the harder dungeon, which is kind of the meat and potatoes of the game, where it's not really a deck-building roguelike anymore. It's just kind of like a roguelike where you're using those decks that you've built with a 3-person party and going through a tougher dungeon, and it's pretty cool. Kind of a different take on this little subgenre that I appreciated. Like I said, it's not that in depth, so I'm not sure what the score is going to be in the end. Let's see once I start writing this. But I mean, it's good. It's I had a lot of fun with it. I'm probably going to go back to it and dig into it some more. But it's a good time. So if you're a fan of Fairy Tale, definitely worth checking out. That's it.
Okay. To briefly touch on one of the questions that have been left in the chat. This is something that's nice and quick. Apple has a made-to-order service where you can have custom engravings on their products. If console makers decided to do that, would it succeed? I don't think the issue I feel like with doing that with consoles is you don't take them anywhere.
Yeah.
Part of the novelty of having the engraving is that you can show it to people.
So you this is something they should give the Switch then.
I think that it would theoretically work best there, but it's also just entirely outside their, like, Nintendo's entire ethos. I feel like it would if they put out something that had face plates again, like the Game Boy Micro, it would make sense. Like, an engraved faceplate honestly makes a fair amount of sense. Yeah, yeah. If they did that again, I think it would make sense. Other than that, I don't think that it makes a great deal of sense. You could theoretically do something like that with the PS5 because, like, the entire side panel slides off. But I can't even imagine.
Someone says there's a Game Boy Micro question in the
we'll pop that one as well.
Oh, and other other quick bit of news that we missed is that Limited Run Games is doing a physical release of the Switch version of Valkyria Chronicles Remastered.
Yeah, I don't
think never got a physical release when that came out a few years ago.
Yeah.
So that's nice.
Well, I have the PS4 Steelbook copy, but you're saying no physical copy for Switch.
Right.
So this, okay.
This yeah, there finally, had not been a physical Switch copy.
Yeah, up until now.
Okay.
No physical release.
Gotcha. Any chance of a Valkyria Chronicles 5? What do you think?
No.
Okay.
No one buys that series.
Except you and me.
People whine about it all the time, and then they put out a game, and no one fucking buys it.
Yeah, people make so much noise about that franchise, and then it just never, ever does anything.
Yeah, so much whining online about never getting the third game. And I guarantee you, had that come out for anything, no one would have fucking bought it. So we should just be thankful we got four of them and move on.
Yeah.
Don't expect a five.
Okay, so another quick one. What was the first impression you had when you looked at the Game Boy Micro? How much was the game console versus the fashion accessory? When I saw it, I was mostly thinking, like, oh, I guess this is just for if they think that this is them hedging their bets in case the DS eats shit. It's like, that really was what it was. I remember, years later I found out that apparently, the screen itself was probably what they'd engineered it around. Like, it was, some standard part screen that was used for, camera viewfinders and shit. Which they just sort of engineered it around. And it was, if you just wanted to play GBA games, it was a really nice way to play GBA games. But, my first impression was mostly just, it wasn't even, is it a fashion accessory or anything. It was just like, oh, this is in case the DS just tanks. Because, if you don't remember or weren't paying attention at the time, the Nintendo was extremely hedging their bets on the DS. Like, when the DS was announced, their description was that it was the third pillar of their strategy. They had the Game Boy line, they had their console line, and the DS was some nebulous third pillar. And it was sort of unclear what that meant. And the answer was it was a way to abandon it if it needed to be abandoned. If you'd ask, when you asked them at the time, they would say that, like, yes, we absolutely have hardware in development that will be a successor to the Game Boy. Like, the Game Boy is not dead. And turned out the Game Boy was absolutely dead. But, at the time, they weren't ready to say anything like that. So, let's see. Fireminer points out that there actually are novelty third-party PS5 faceplates. That doesn't surprise me. Because again, you can just slide the entire thing off, but also, it's weird. And the Espeluda 2 is coming to the Switch, which is an interesting old little shooter, so that's nice to see. But yeah. I think that's probably it for tonight, unless anyone else has strong opinions about the Game Boy Micro.
I'd forgotten that it existed.
My wife almost bought me one because she thought I would like it.
Would you have?
You probably would have.
Yeah.
Yeah, it seems like your kind of thing.
Yeah.
And there, again, it's as far as official ways to play Game Boy Advance games, it was a really nice way to play Game Boy Advance games.
I think when she saw it was right when they were kind of clearing out stock. By the time
she decided to pull the trigger, they were kind of gone.
Yeah, exactly.
That's a shame. Hate it when that happens. Okay. And I'm going to briefly answer this one because it's cursed.
God, what? What am I, Fire Miner? It's too late for this.
Yeah. What I'm going to say is that nothing to do with
Spider-Man stories.
Nothing to do with Sin's past ever gets to be acknowledged again.
Comic coming out that I want to read.
I can answer this. The one thing Spider fans like to complain nowadays that Marvel just doesn't know what to do is Peter and the main Spider comic. Dude, my fruit. I think they know exactly what to do with it because it's been very good for a while. So I don't.
Yeah, I feel like Spider-Man is one of those things that's so big that there's always going to be a contingent that's like, they don't know what to do. They don't know what they're doing.
Yeah.
And it's like, it'll be almost completely agnostic of what the comics quality is.
Right. Like, they've done great stuff with Norman Osborn and some weird stuff where, like, the Goblin is taken out of him. That whole storyline was cool. They did an awesome storyline with Tombstone. And so, yeah, this is definitely not a Barry Allen type. So, like, Barry Allen was dead for a long time.
Decades.
And
like, Barry Allen came back because the inevitable endpoint of someone who read comics when he had died was like, no, I need to bring back the real one.
Yeah.
Because that's what happens every time you kill off a character hard enough. But, I think that, like, again, the issue you run into with Barry Allen is that, you know, you bring back that character and it's just like he was built for Silver Age comics and they don't, and there's like a 20-year gap of him not being around where you would try to theoretically have tried to rebuild him to be to work in modern comics, and that gap just exists. There's nothing filling it, and so you end up with this like kind of a void of what to do with this character because he's not really built for the comics he's in. But you get someone like Peter, and it's just like, yeah, he's been around continuously since the 60s. He has been reshaped for modern comics as much as he needs to be, and he will continue to be reshaped because that's how you keep telling stories.
Yep.
That's the previous question, or the one where MJ married some guy named Paul and Peter hung out with them. That was whatever. The overarching stories beyond that crap were still very good.
So my previous
point remains. I think the larger issue is they don't know what to do with MJ, not what to do with Peter.
Yeah, I wouldn't even say they don't know what to do so much as that they're unwilling to do the obvious thing.
Yes. They should be married, move on. And they should have a family, because as Ultimate Spider-Man currently shows, that works very well. So why not just fucking do it?
Like, even when you look at something like the Spider-Verse movies, where, like, it's about Peter being unsure about, like, commitment and family and children and marriage, it's like, it shows how well he works in a mentor role, mm-hmm. and it shows... like, eventually you do have him commit to that, and like, he does, like, of course he's terrified of what that means, but that doesn't mean he's not going to do it. But yeah,
so I guess the long answer to all of this is no, they have tons of things they can do with Peter, and we'll see where they go, because it looks like they're about, based on the cover of issue number 950 sitting next to me, they're going to do another Tombstone storyline, which should be really good, because they've done really good things with that character recently.
Yeah.
The new one is, I think, pretty good. Let's hope it won't crash and burn like the usual. I mean...
I think it's Ultimate Spider-Man was kind of good throughout its entire run.
Yeah. Ultimate Spider-Man
was just
amazing.
The universe collapsing around it.
Everything else kind of sucked. And I think a lot of the issues were just like, the whole idea behind the Ultimate Universe is to do it differently, and a lot of it was kind of just the same.
You kept seeing like these guys, like they would sort of start with like people who had like ideas about what to do, and then eventually like some guy would get brought in to do like the Ultimates, and it would be like this was a guy who had no history with the Ultimate line and was just sort of like randomly bringing in stuff that they remembered because it was in the 616 comics, and so you just ended up with like, you know, Ultimate Spider-Man is remarkable in part because it's just such a long run with the same people. And so it has like this consistent idea of like, yeah, we're doing modern Spider-Man.
Yeah. But I mean, the new Ultimate Universe, I think, is a lot safer from that kind of thing, because at its baseline, it is an incredibly different universe from the main one, because it's, I mean, even using the original Ultimate Universe, it's the Maker comes in and fucks up a world. And what does that look like? and how do you get heroes out of that? And it's been extremely interesting so far. Like Spider-Man is, he prevented him from getting bit by a spider. So Tony Stark, who is Iron Lad and not Iron Man in this, sends him the spider so he can get his powers. And, you know,
you'll let the spider bite you. Peter, don't worry about
Peter
it.
Peter isn't a teenager. He's an adult with two kids.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that automatically, even if you bring in some familiar characters and villains, is a very different version of Spider-Man.
Mm-hmm.
And then you've got the Ultimates, which is a bunch of characters trying to figure out how to make a team of heroes from a world that's essentially had all its heroes removed.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, how do we fight the Makers, who's essentially like a god level character? Super genius. So that's different already. And then you've got Black Panther, which is, you know, he's a king trying to deal with these other powers, you know, who are essentially the Maker's lackeys in Moon Knight, and who's the other, and Khonshu, and I forget who exactly it is, but essentially it's like Egyptian gods. And then you've got X-Men off to the side, which is basically like an X-Men manga, because it's a single artist and writer doing the whole thing. And it's not even clear how that ties into the rest of the Ultimate stuff yet. It's been its own weird thing. And definitely recommend people check that one out. So yeah, I've been very excited for the new Ultimate comics. And if you need something new, people, you got to check it out. It's really good. Especially Ultimate Spider-Man again. But just the whole thing overall is way better than the original Ultimate Universe, because they can't just redo old stories.
Mm-hmm.
So okay, that's the end.
They've at least set up a base premise that doesn't allow them to fall back on old stories.
Exactly. By no matter what, the stories have to be different, because this is a world that has had its superheroes removed. So extreme things have to happen for there even to be any superheroes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So everyone here is super tired. Well,
yeah, let's wrap this up.
Everyone here in the U.S. is super tired. I don't know how Gaijin's feeling, but Gaijin, since you're not tired, please tell me about reading material.
Okay. So if you need a bedtime story for your children in the evening, which, honestly, I've been doing sideways stories from Wayside School with mine.
Always a good choice. But
always a great choice, yes. But if they need something different, we have Tanuki as a Teapot, which is a collection of animal-related short folk tales from Japan, along with various cultural commentary to lead in or explain things, or sometimes just the hell of it. Available on Kindle and Kindle Unlimited. The paperback is recommended just for the pictures, but any purchase is nice. And if your children are into role-playing games, tabletop in particular, we have Princesses of the Pizza Parlor, again on Kindle and Kindle Unlimited. Both or all by Michael Yarimizu, Yarimizu. And it's basically just kids playing games and learning to deal with each other. Not always the easiest thing. Sometimes, you know, sometimes kobolds are much better, except now that I think of it, the kobold episode did not turn out very well for the heroes. So I guess friendship is less of a trial in that case. The kobolds episode was fun. Number 7, if anyone's counting. So yes, so Princesses of the Pizza Parlor on Kindle and Kindle Unlimited, or Tanuki as a Teapot on the same, both by Michael Yarimizu, Yarimizu. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Let's see. Joe, where can they find those Arcade August videos when they go up?
You can find me on YouTube. That's Smokin' Joe Gamer. So I do not have any Twitch streams or any live streams planned for now, but I have other content that will be going up over the next few months. So I would like to do Sega Timber again, and I would like to do Spooky Hallow stream, you know, just do spooky games in October, maybe some Resident Evil speedruns, that sort of thing. But yeah, for now, you can look up Arcade August videos. There's 7 of them right now. There's 2 more that need to be uploaded, and then I'm recording at least 2 more over the next few days. And then I'll be doing Sega games throughout September and, you know, horror games throughout October. Yeah, so check that out. And if I do any live streams, it'll just be straight to YouTube at this point, because I'm just not really building an audience on Twitch and just not having fun on there anymore. It's just, it's all bots and, you know, scammers and whatnot. So, yep. So my YouTube channel is Smokin' Joe Gamer at Smokin' Joe Gamer 86. And most of my past Twitch streams are on there as well. So I have 338 videos. Wow, how about that? So plenty of stuff for you to watch if you're ever bored and all that. And yeah, you may get a kick out of my full playthrough of the Simpsons arcade game. Just a whole lot of Simpsons quotes throughout the episode.
You too can be horrified at some of the weird imagery choices that were made in that game.
Oh man, weird game. Yep, that's all I got.
Yeah, and that leaves us. You can ask us questions like dear friend Fireminer did. If you catch us when we're streaming, you can ask them in the chat, which you can find at twitch.tv/askwheels. We're typically streaming 9 p.m. Pacific, midnight Eastern on Thursdays. You can also catch our sister show Shenanigans, which is 9 p.m. Pacific, midnight Eastern Sundays. I don't know what we're doing this week, but you can also ask us questions by going into the RP Gamer Discord, which you can find by going to the community tab on rpgamer.com. It's a lovely community, whether you want to ask us questions or not, but we always appreciate them. And you can also ask us questions in the comments section on rpgamer.com underneath this very episode. We're always happy to answer questions any way you want to send them, as long as we can figure out where they are. Those are the places that we check. But otherwise, I think that wraps it up for us. So see ya, Space Cowboys.
See ya.
See ya.